Pashupati Raja Raja Ram, Haipati Pati Raja Ram. So I decided in this new scene, because I hadn't been in such an intense situation with hippies, that I would have to suspend, willing suspension of disbelief, as the poet Coleridge said. I was sitting there thinking I'm in a sort of theatre. The scene consisted of sitting around smoking a lot of chillums, and there was a lot of coughing, which I, in my yet unchanged aura, was still resisting and saying, "You're all coughing so loud I can't hear Chiranjeeva talk." And sure enough, Chiranjeeva was doing a lot of talking. Could be up to 16 hours a day, and smoking, and eating, and sleeping. Suddenly, on the third day, in a gap between smoking and just listening, I suddenly found I was like above my head, looking down at my body, and I was sitting in the lotus position. And I remembered at this yoga school that I briefly attended in Pondicherry, the difficulties that the students had in going into a lotus position. And here I was, just unabstractedly sitting there without being conscious of it in that position. Suddenly, I go back inside my body. As I do so, a shiver ran down my back. And then I thought, hey, this is all more real than I ever realized. And I remember that it took 10 days before I got hooked. But on the 10th day, it was a scene that happened as Father was about to go into town with one or two of his followers, and somebody stopped him in the corridor, and they were kind of almost crying with intensity, and he took this person, whose name was Sudama, round the shoulder and said, "Look, you will realize everything as soon as..." And it goes on like that with waves for a few minutes and then stops. And I suddenly felt, my God, this is all true. He is divine. We are divine. This is all true. And I rush into the garden. We're immortal. And as I rush into the garden, we're all barefooted, of course. I bang my foot against a stone and go, ouch! And suddenly calm down and think, okay, but still, you have to be grounded. Now, it's the 10th day, and I've now become an official member of the Shiva Kalpa Appreciation Society. Shiva Kalpa is the era that Chiranjeeva says, as Shiva, he inaugurated on September the 19th, 1966. It's an era where truth will finally prevail, and justice will be seen and understood by all to have applied to everything that ever happened. When we see the full ramifications of the cosmic imagination that is guiding everyone, but who nevertheless are leading a multiplicity of individual lives. So, on the second day of my new guise, I come downstairs, and Father is railing against this Indian sadhu. There weren't many Indian sadhus, there was just a couple. And there was a couple of people who were sort of cum servants, cum sadhus, with him, and then there was his family. The rest of us were all Westerners. And he's railing against this Indian, whose name I believe was Balaram, and he mentions his various vices, one of which is being there to screw all the Western women he can get. Another is to make trouble between the Indian family and the Westerners. And the third is to steal from all the Westerners anything that they have. And as he said each vice, he said to someone, "Aren't I right?" And they said, "Yes." And then the third one, stealing from Westerners, he says, "Aren't I right, Joe?" And I felt very uncomfortable because, first of all, Balaram had spoken only the night before with me in an evening moment, very kindly and concernedly. And B, I thought to myself, I've been a thief in my time. Who am I to judge? Didn't Father say there is no right or wrong? So I just answered him immediately, well, there is no right or wrong, is there? And he booms out, ah, yes, I see why you've been in a concentration camp, because you're a concentrated idiot. And then he moves back to insulting Balaram. Either that night or the next day, Father suddenly stopped speaking. Something wrong, and everybody was starting to get on top of one another, what we'd been doing wrong, who was wrong, what was this, what was going on. And then the next day, when I wake up, one of what could be called the elders amongst the Westerners, his name was Vasudeva, a favorite of Father's in his talks, took me into the garden and said, you know that this is a small house and we have people constantly coming and we have to prepare for his going to America, which was still supposed to be imminent. So some people have to leave to make room and you're one of them. And I, who had half been sensing that this was going to happen, after all, I'd been very low on the totem pole of sadhus in that ashram because I was particularly clumsy at making the preparations for making a chillum and was considered a low yogi because of that and always was put at the back of the circle in the smoking so that you got the dregs. When he said, you are one of them, I still feel a little outraged and I say to him, are you speaking with the authority of Father? And he says, yes. So I realize I must leave. I get my passport from Chiranjiva's wife, whose name was Nishtu. Inside is 100 rupees, because I had given my money to Chiranjiva when I entered the ashram. Well, not to Chiranjiva, to his wife. There was 100 rupees in it. I'm still in a sort of semi-rebellious state as I'm going out of the door. And I think, so outraged with the seeming injustice, I say, Father's not going to go to America before I see him again. And leave. And then I decide to take up the Nepalese visa, which I'd got prior to meeting these people. And I'm going to go to Kathmandu and go to the base camp of Everest. So on the way to Kathmandu is Benares, the holy city, of course, the city of Shiva, Kashi as it's called. So I go to Benares, and there on a houseboat, a French hippie lady called Brigitte asks if she can accompany me to Kathmandu. She has no money, and I have 100 rupees. So anyway, we travel to Kathmandu together. I don't see much of Brigitte there because she has her own French friends that she hangs out with. But I do try to reach, although having no money at all by now, I try to reach the base camp of Everest as I'd done the previous time. But the task proved beyond me once again, being starving and clothes rotting off. I turn back, come back to Kathmandu. After a while, I decide I have to leave to carry on back to my Far East quest. And as I am leaving the hotel where I've been staying at the bottom of the steps is Brigitte. And she starts, as she sees me, to say, Joe, je t'aime, je t'aime. And the next thing I know, she's torn off all her clothes, dashed off into the street naked, and I spend the next 6 weeks looking after this flipped-out hippie chick. Which, if you want to know more about her, she has written 3 books about her journeys. And the book part dealing where I come into her life is titled H. So, after 6 weeks of looking after her, one day, she's done it again, torn off all her clothes, rushed out from the hotel into the street. I'm on the first floor looking down at her from the window, seen as gathered around her, you know, they were included Eight Fingers Eddie and trying to calm her down, and a group of Nepalese just goggling at her. And suddenly somebody comes into the room and says, and I'd gone completely cold. Instead of running down, I just stood there in a kind of frozen position. And he said, hey, this guy who came in the room, you know who's in town? That cat they call Chiranjeeva. Do you imagine? I didn't immediately, because I thought, I'm in disgrace, rush off. But the next morning at dawn, I go to the hotel where he was apparently staying, see him in the street, we embrace, go upstairs to his hotel room, where he says, make me a chillum. I do that. Then after the chillum, which, by the way, I'm not very good at making chillums, but so after that, I say to him, what are you doing here, Father? You're supposed to be off to America any day. He says, and all alone. And he puts his arm around me and says, I'm here for you, Joe. I'm here for you. Well, it also turns, although that was very flattering, he was also trying to find a way out of India because the Indian government was bureaucratically frustrating him. So by perhaps flying directly from Kathmandu, he could overfly India and just get rid of the bureaucratic obstacles. And he said to me during the week he spent there, you know, I'm spending my fare in all this. If you know anybody who can help me, then bring them to me. And one day, an American who was also a breadhead type of hippie said to me, I'll get him to America, just leave him alone with me. By the way, Chiranji was going around addressing groups of hippies and telling them all about his new era of Shiva Kalpa. And after one such gathering, and we got into a rickshaw with American Joe, I just left them in the rickshaw and told them I would meet Father later. When Father came back from that lunch with American Joe, he was fulminating about this Joe's character. He said, do you know what he wanted me to do? He wanted me to smuggle 5 kilos of dope into America and he would pay my trip. He said, what an idiot, he says. I could have said yes, gone into the toilet at the airport and stashed the dope in the toilet and carried on. And I was a bit abashed at having done the introductions, and I said something like, but he goes to the temple of Pashupatinath every day. And then Father said, his family, by the way, he had taken them to safety in the jungle because they had been attacked in Calcutta. He said, I've got to get back to my family, but Pashupatinath won't let me leave. I've got to go to Pashupatinath before I leave. One day before that, he says to me, Joe, you have pleased me. I shall grant you one boon. Anything you want, you can have. And I, who was worried about Brigitte, who had now been put in the mental hospital in the prison, which was the only mental hospital they used in Kathmandu, I said, well, there's this woman and she's flipped out. Perhaps you could visit her. And we go after a couple of days to visit her. And the scene, though very cinematic, because she came from the prison to the prison gate, surrounded by 6 women, and we stood 10 feet apart, and I said something like to Brigitte, look, because obviously I told her something about Chiranjeeva, look, he's come, he's here. And then she said, I knew you were coming. And then Chiranjeeva says, well, I hope we meet in better times. And then she turns around and we turn around and we all go our own ways. And Father says something like, I'm thinking, God, I could have had anything I wanted. And this is indeterminate. And he says, don't become preoccupied, Joe. Don't become preoccupied. One day he says, come, we've got to go to Pashupatinath now. At first he was only wanting to go with a goddess. And we did go with one of his goddesses, Yamuna, French hippie, but I also accompanied them, and we went to Pashupatinath, and it is, of course, the most sacred of Hindu temples. And Westerners are not allowed inside. It's too dangerous. The linga worship, you see. Anyway, Father says, I won't be long. Just wait for me outside. Yaman and I waited outside. And sure enough, after 5-10 minutes, he comes back out, buys himself one of those malas, as they're called, the 108 beads, which make a pendant from a beggar outside the temple. We then go to the tea house, smoke a chillum. The next thing I know, one kid, 10-year-old kid, appears out of nowhere, touches him on the shoulder. They both race outside onto a plateau, roll around, down and down the plateau onto the grass knoll below, like a pair of 10-year-olds would. He jumps up, starts to talk, a crowd gathers round him. He's speaking in whatever language that was, the native language, for about 20 minutes. And then he breaks off and says, come on, we're going back into town, we get on a bus. And he's talking excitedly on the bus and touches me on my knee while he's talking. And suddenly, inwardly, I see the 1,000-petaled lotus unfold. Physically, I'm wearing the Indian garment called a lungi. My penis goes into this very slow and languorous maxi erection. This